Sim Racing Land, good evening. It's Tuesday night, 8 p.m., and it's time for the second edition, second episode of our newest league podcast series here. This is called the Burn 'em Down Podcast. It's the podcast for the Rolling Thunder Racing Series. They run two different events, the Gen 4 series on Sunday nights, as well as the once-a-month Rolling Thunder Money Race. We'll be talking about last week's Money Race and a big event, Battle of the Teams, coming up next month in November, with all the information you need to enter these money races, etc., and as well as everything they do is broadcast on the Global Sim Racing Channel. We've got some special guests in tonight. First and third place winners from the podium from last week's race at Las Vegas. I'd like to introduce at this time Jared Mogard. He drives number 15. He was the Vegas winner last week. And coming in third place, Colin Weatherholt, driver number 20, finishing in third place. Good evening, guys. Hello?
Hey, how's it going?
Oh, there you are.
Hey, how's it going?
Yeah, you almost made me pull out that one about who pulled Sally's hair in third grade there, because it was a little quiet when we started. So,
hey.
let's get into...
You got it? You got a copy?
Yes, I do. You can hear me? Not again.
Sorry, you're cutting in and out just a little bit, so.
All right, All right, let me switch something over here.
Yeah, we got you. It's just like a slow motion talk.
Son of a bitch. About the race, where you started when you qualified, how'd you feel with qualifying, and then once the race got going, what was your strategy to get up front or stay up front?
Yeah, I think we started 12th. I guess I don't really remember where I started, but I think it was about 12th or 13th, and then actually it was 12th because we started on the outside and kind of had a weird start there. Chain reaction deal, had a yellow, and had to avoid all that. So it's kind of a slow start for everybody, but once we got going, it was a pretty good race. Strategy wise, it was kind of weird. Like, I had a plan. I figured I'd probably be decent on a long run. I knew I wasn't going to be good on a short run. So I had a plan going into it, and then kind of had a long yellow to start the race, which kind of switched my plan a little bit. And the way I wanted to go about the race was, because we have limited tires, which plays into your strategy as well. I wanted to have tires for at least the last pit stop, and then depending on the lap of that last pit stop, maybe have one more in case of the late yellow. But the way it worked out, we were able to take tires our last two stops, and the last stop was a really short run to the end, to where, we were kind of good, even if we did get a yellow. But, it was one of them races where, like I said, it started a little slow, but we had some really long green flag runs and green flag pit stops. And the strategy just kind of came to me, which typically, when I think ahead and make a plan, it never goes according to plan. So, the fact that it went that way and we were able to cycle through the green flag stops and all that good stuff and everything worked out made me look smarter than I probably am a little bit.
So Vegas isn't known for really chewing up tires unless you do it on purpose. So how was your fuel window, and how did that play into changing tires?
Yeah, so the fuel window was about 30 laps safely. You can maybe get 32 if you were lucky. I know. So about lap 40, a lapper drove through me leading and spun me out. The yellow come out, and that was about lap 32, I think, or 31, coming to 32 on fuel. And I was actually about out of fuel. I was out of fuel. and three and four coming to pit open. So I was coasting until I got to the apron, and then I picked up and I was able to get enough speed to get to pit road. So yeah, 32 was about the absolute most you can run, but 30 safely. And then yeah, you know, these cars, they burn up tires. You know, I this was only my third race. I think Vegas was in the car. Mm-hmm. I've never raced them before. I mean, I've raced ARCA car, which is basically the same thing, less power, but you know, these things had a lot more power, and you know, burning up tires pretty good, but it was fun slipping and sliding and trying to manage your tires to you know, to make it, because you had to pit about six times or so, five, six times, and you only had three sets of tires, so you had to make them last for sure.
Oh, pitting six times, that's a lot for a race. So that you really had to plan your strategies well between tires, fuel, and green flag versus yellow flag cautions, pit stops, it sounds like.
Yeah, so I kind of, you know, for me personally, like I said, my plan going in was to kind of do 60 laps on the first run with the tires. Mm-hmm. And then we had that long yellow to start the race, so I kind of bumped that back a little bit. And I did, we had a yellow on about 65, 63 or something. Took tires there. And then, like I said, my last two stops on, I think it was about 90-ish or 100 or something like that. And then 125, I think it was. Whatever the last two stops were, we used the last two sets of tires, and you know, in the end, it ended up working out for us.
Well, cool. Congratulations. Colin, tell me about where you qualified. Were you happy with that? And depending on where you qualified, did it change your strategy at all? And also go into your fuel strategy and tires.
Yeah, so I actually ended up qualifying on pole, top on time with second place, and then I think third place was just a thousandth behind us. So I was really, really fortunate to you know, take the pole with a tied time. I'm sure iRacing goes to a fourth decimal point that we can't see, but
yep.
Yeah, so I started up front, and I really just stuck to my original plan, which was to just double stint my first set of tires, you know, run a full fuel tank, take it easy on the tires. I let a few guys go, just knowing that I was going to get the worn out tire fuel stints out of the way first. And I ended up pitting around lap 31, maybe 32, I forget. It might have been a little later because of the long first caution. So whenever I pit, I ended up a lap down. There was guys that pit during the first caution. And the third caution came out, or the second caution came out, and it actually trapped me almost a lap down, because for some reason the pace car was just picking up the wrong vehicle for restarts. So I started just in front of the leader on the outside lane, unfortunately, with old tires, and I got freight trained, and I was down in 16th position, a lap down. And I forget when the next caution came out. It might have been lap 60 or so, and they ended up giving me the correct wave around, but unfortunately all my track position was completely lost. So I was running around in 16th during the caution, got my lap back, and I knew from then on I just had to run pretty much my tires as hard as I could and equally divide my last three pit stops just to get the maximum use out of my tires to make up position. And I think we might have gone green from then on out, I believe. I'm not quite sure. I think we did. And, yeah, drove it from 16th to 3rd. I'm sure I was jumping up into the lead and back down and getting past. But the way it played out towards the end was just I took home 3rd, and I was pretty happy with that, just because I thought my race was over once I lost all that track position and knew I had to burn up my tires and really couldn't conserve after that.
So when you were back in 16th, did it change your go time as compared to what you might have done had you not been back that far?
Yeah, definitely. It was just go time constantly. I just had to be on it, push the car, try not to tear up the right front too much, and try to just equally tear up the right front and right rear. But I just had to I couldn't really save a set of tires per se for the mm-hmm. end, or try to stretch out any fuel runs, because I was passing cars and trying to make it back up there and get some track position back. And it would have been nice to have a caution at the end, and we could have all pit and been on our last equal set of tires, and it'd have been really cool, but didn't work out that way for me. But I was happy with the third place after the debacle.
That's like me when I usually qualify. Usually when I'm lucky in the top 10, but after a couple laps, I'm usually back in the middle of the pack. And to me, finishing in the top 10 is, I consider that really good. And if I finish in the top 5 or better, I think iRacing made a scoring mistake. With the Gen 4 on Las Vegas, how often have you run that combination?
I have never run that combination. I don't even know that I've raced a stock car around Las Vegas before. I raced the Indy cars around it. I'm really not that much of a NASCAR guy, to be honest. I'm more of an open wheel guy and a road course guy. Okay. So it was pretty cool. I really like these Gen 4 cars, though. I like having too much power.
Yeah.
And it's really fun to just play with the right foot. You know, I'm like driving with my big toe on the throttle pedal, and it's a lot of fun to balance the car. You know, as you start picking up throttle, you're releasing wheel, and it's just a big balancing act. Even in the straightaways, this car's hard to drive straight.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I haven't driven the Gen 4, but when the 87s came out, the only way I could describe the 87 was like you're 16 years old, you just got your permit, or if you're in a state where you can drive, and you take out your grandfather's 1982 Pontiac Bonneville, and you forget how to stop. You're like on the edge the whole time with
well,
that car.
Well, my dad drove a minivan, so I never had any sort of that.
Okay. Well, he was smart, because in case you hit something, you're the last one to get hurt.
That's
so,
right.
Yeah, but that's kind of sounds the way the Gen 4 drives, kind of like that. It's so much different. I'm not a fan of the Gen 7. I think they're too easy to drive. It was an over 50 league, and we were doing the 87s at Watkins Glen, and it was a wild race. You're literally sitting.
Those cars have long braking zones.
Yeah, literally sitting on the edge of your seat the whole race. So, Jared, tell me about how you got into racing. Do you have any real racing experience, or anybody in your family, and who was your influence, and at what age?
Just a race fan. No experience really of that. Big into the dirt track races. We're up in Minnesota, so we got quite a few dirt tracks around the area and whatnot. And just started going at a really young age and fell in love with it. And that's my true passion. I'm kind of like Colin. Like, I'll watch NASCAR, but I'm honestly not a big fan of asphalt racing on TV or anything. But when it comes to iRacing, I do prefer the asphalt over the dirt. I don't know why I just do, but that's kind of how I started. Just started going at a really young age as a fan, and fell in love with it. It's a great way to pass some time, especially in the summertime.
Oh yeah, we've got a bunch of dirt tracks. Most all of them within me are about an hour away. We've got Lebanon Valley, Malta, and then further up, Devil's Bowl in Vermont, Utica. So, it's a cheap way to spend the Saturday night. The one near us, Lebanon Valley, I think it's $10 to get in. And darn it, they raised the price of their baked beans from 25 to 50 cents about 2 years ago. And that really got the redneck farmers upset when they did that, because it's kind of out in the hayfield part of the county over there. So it is a good, cheap night. When you mentioned you like dirt racing better, or asphalt better on iRacing than dirt, is there any reason for that? Do you find the iRacing dirt not quite realistic, or you just like the live dirt track better?
Well, so a little bit of a backstory. I really don't know. Wasn't really going to get into this, but I suppose we can since we got some time. I am physically disabled. So, birth deal, so I have been my whole life, but, so I'm running on a controller as a result of that, and, I feel like the asphalt on a controller in iRacing is, quote-unquote, easier than it is on the dirt, but, I'm decent at the dirt, but I'm a lot more comfortable and confident on the asphalt, and then, so that's part of the reason. But another part of the reason is For me, it seems like the asphalt side of things, you can go green a little bit more. I mean, you get in races where you still have a lot of yellows, but it seems like asphalt, you can get more green flag runs. It seems like the dirt guys, you know, they think they need to throw it in there and throw a massive slider and crack it on your nose or and wreck you and stuff like
sense.
That. So I think the overall racing is a little bit better on the asphalt than it is the dirt.
Got it. Colin, what's your racing background?
Well, my whole life is racing, it seems like. When I was young, my dad raced 600 micro sprints, and
oh, cool.
He decided when I was born he was going to stop doing that, and he got big into radio control cars. And so from basically the time I was out of diapers, I was at a radio control track, radio control car track, and I did that and still do that pretty frequently. As a teenager, I traveled the country and raced all the big RC races
went
to a world championships in Las Vegas, which I had to qualify for. So I've been doing that and did that, and always just a big race fan. I moved away from home to here to Indianapolis is where I live now, and got a job working for an IndyCar team at Carpenter Racing, and I've been there for this was my sixth season there. I've been there since I was 19.
Wow.
And I paint all of our race cars.
Oh, that's
painter
cool.
By trade, I guess is what you could call me. And so, yeah, I do everything. My whole life revolves around racing. And when I'm not painting real race cars, I'm painting iRacing cars for myself or racing iRacing cars.
There you go.
Watching the Indy cars and going to the track there. So it's a busy racing life for me.
Oh, that's awesome. Cool job. Closest I got to racing is I work over at Lime Rock Park on three of their big events. Sports car, which one is it? Trans Am Series, and then when IMSA is there, and then Labor Day weekend, they do the historics, and occasionally they'll let me drive my truck on the track. That's about
awesome.
The closest. But in 2 weeks, I did get picked out of our group that works there too, and a bunch of us, we got 3 hours on the autocross track with Skip Barber, Mustang from the Skip Barber Racing School. So that'll be my first time I've ever been really doing anything driving a race car. The fastest I've gone was when IMSA was up at Watkins Glen and we had tickets to go up. So I entered a WeatherTech contest, and that got us tickets to into their hospitality tent and a ride around Watkins Glen, including the boot in the new Toyota Supra. And let me tell you, when you're doing 140 miles an hour coming to the chicane and the driver's narrating what's going on and you're doing 140 and then all of a sudden you're in the chicane doing 80, besides laughing your head off because you can't believe it, the G-forces are unbelievable. So,
I don't doubt that.
That was pretty cool. So what got you into iRacing, Colin?
Well, I was, I think, 13 years old, and it was around Christmas time. I had watched lots of those wreck montages of NASCAR Racing 2003.
Okay.
I thought, man, that'd be cool, like, to have, like, a real racing game on PC. I'd never really played PC. So one year for Christmas, my dad got me a PC, and I farted around in our 2003 for, I don't know, a couple weeks, and I was like, wait a second. I know this iRacing thing.
Yep.
And it was probably the end of my Christmas break, seventh grade, and my dad's like, well, let's just try it out. And my grandpa ended up having, for some reason, he had a Driving Force GT wheel, and he brought it over, and we set it up on the desk.
Oh, cool.
And I've been in and out of iRacing since then. I think I've been a member now for 11 years or so, maybe just almost 12 years. Just in and out, you know, it's always been there, and just basically since COVID, I've gotten, like, really into it. Loaded up my iRacing rig and brought it down to Indianapolis from my hometown, and just been into it ever since. And then obviously when COVID happened, iRacing took off, and I was working but not at work, and it's, you know, it's hard to paint race cars remotely. So what I was doing is I was just working for Ed Carpenter Racing with their IndyCar Pro Invitational stuff, and basically coaching the real-life drivers on how to drive iRacing, because they had no idea.
Oh, that's cool. Yeah, you sound like you got into it about the same time we did here, and similar situation. My son got into it. He saved up his allowance, and he got the $50 wheel and pedal combination that you strap to the dining room table, and he was using his laptop. And then all of a sudden I get an email from iRacing, and I'm like, what this iRacing stuff that I've been suspended for 30 days? And I said, Sam, can you explain this? Because he was 13 or under 13, and he had to use my credit card to get in. He says, yeah, he goes, I booted some guy coming out of turn three at Phoenix or something and got reported. And I says, I hope that doesn't bother me if I ever try this out. So then we built a rig down in part of my man cave where I used to do home brewing, and bought a open wheeler seat and assembly that holds the wheel and stuff. And we were still using a laptop sitting on the ground. And finally we built the platform, and it's been there ever since. So, Jared, how'd you come across Rolling Thunder, and how long have you been with that league?
Just recently. This is Vegas was my third race overall. I ran a money race with them there. Mm-hmm. But Vegas was a race through the season, so them are the only two races I've had with this deal.
Oh, cool.
And I don't know, I was bored a couple weeks ago and scrolling through the iRacing group deal that they got on Facebook, and
yep.
seen the advertisement for the league, and kind of caught my attention. And I'm big on fixed setups, because I'm not I pay for my open setups, but yep. I'm not smart enough or have the patience to figure out how to build them. So I like to fix setups, and that caught my eye. And the Gen 4 car is something that mm-hmm. You have to drive and not hold that open like it
right.
seems like you have to do with the truck and the cup car, and figured what the heck, we'll give her a shot and see how she goes. So far so good. It's a good group of guys. The admins and the officials that are there seem to be pretty good, and working through the tough deal that we had at Vegas to start. And so far so good, so looking forward to it.
Right, cool. So posting on the iRacing pages, or there's a bunch of them. I think I'm on about 10 or 12 of them, and sometimes you just look through and you just catch something, catches your eye, and you run with it and it works. Colin, how about you? How did you get involved with Rolling Thunder?
So I actually joined the league Sunday morning, right before the race.
Oh, there you go.
I'm fairly close iRacing friends. I say iRacing friends because I have yet to meet him in real life with mm-hmm. Joey Atterbury, who's a commentator for GSRC and iRacing themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And he knew that I've been running some Gen 4 stuff. We were talking in our Discord chat, and he had mentioned something about this league, and I kind of drug my feet, didn't pay attention to it. And then Sunday morning he sends me a message. He's like, hey, are you going to race this? I'm commentating on it Sunday. And yeah, what the heck. So I got a hold of Justin, and we got all set up for the race, and I really hadn't heard about it before he mentioned it to me, so
oh,
I guess
okay.
I'm more of a word of mouth
yep.
Join than coming across it on a forum or on iRace or Facebook pages and stuff like that.
Got it. It's hard to turn down joining, because there's paychecks every race if you do well, and there's good payouts at the end of the year, and looking at the entry fee for the amount of money that gets returned, it's not a bad deal at all, because if the league is run anywhere near how nice their website is, you're going to be in for a treat, because the website is just one of the best ones I've seen for racing, especially that landing page that comes on, or that first page with the little graphic and the of the league logo. It's pretty cool. So yeah, definitely kudos out there to the management and Justin owning the league. It looks like it's got something good started here.
Yeah, the website's super, super nice.
Yeah.
I had trouble logging into it at the beginning,
mm-hmm.
and I ended up, it was something with my internet service provider, and I landed there on my phone, and I was like, wow, this is like really, really professional. Looks really nice.
Yeah. Usually you don't get that with leagues. I mean, you're lucky if you got a website, or you're lucky if you get the points updated, let alone anything else.
Yeah.
Like I said, it's been good. Seems like they're doing it the right way, you know.
Yeah.
And the money caught my attention too, because most of the time you pay them and you maybe get a decent amount back at the end of the year if you're lucky, and like, most leagues a pocket for us. But it seems like it's a pretty good deal over here for not doing that and getting back to the drivers that support the deal every week for sure.
Yeah, it's definitely an incentive to show up every week when there's a chance of getting a paycheck. Because there's been other leagues that sound more like a Bernie Madoff or what's that guy in New York there with FTX, the Bitcoin guy, setting up the leagues, and then somebody stole my computer, and then meanwhile he goes up and does it again. So it definitely looks, you know, amazing. And then on the money races, where the, like last week, that it said guaranteed no matter how many enter the race. Now, how many times do you see that, where you've got a money race and then down on the bottom it says, oh yeah, that $10,000 is based on, you know, 75 entries. So, you know, kudos to Justin there for setting it up and running with it. So let's take a look at review from last week at Vegas. First place is Jared Mogard, who's with us here tonight. Second place driver, car number 34, Matthew Robinson. Colin Weatherhelts, who's with us tonight, finished third in car 20. Daniel Eberhardt, third, drives car 90, he finished P4. P5 driver in the car number 2, Michael Larch. Sixth place goes to the driver of 38, Ryan M. Johnson. Drew Ballesteros in the 54 finished in P7. Matthew Molnar in car 29 finished in P8. Ninth place goes to the driver of car number 69, Randall Nichols. And in 10th is Jacob Manning, driver of car 9. Guys, before we go to the Gen 4 points, any plans for this weekend coming up for Watkins Glen? Any strategies you're looking to do there?
Staying on the track. I don't know. You know, for me, again, my little situation there, but I like the road courses. They're a challenge. They're something different. I kind of like them because if you're kind of in a slump or seem to be wrecking or just making bad decisions, sometimes a road course is fun because you gotta kind of refocus and race the racetrack, not necessarily race the cars. So I like that part of it, but this car, a lot of power, road course, different braking, all that good stuff. Looking forward to it. Just keep it on track, keep it clean, and I'm going to kind of be like you. A top 10 is going to be like a win for me on Sunday.
Yeah. I've been going to Watkins Glen, I think, Sunday night for the last, got to be 10 years now. And for the last 8 years, we've been camping near Turn 10 by the Jackie Robinson grandstands. It's a great venue. When I'm racing it, it just seems to be... what I do is I tend to take the track too lightly because it doesn't look like it's that difficult, but there's just certain things where there's only a couple technical parts of the track that I can see, and it's just hard to get into a rhythm on that track. And then if you get out of your rhythm on a road course, do you find, like I do, that it's very hard to get back into your sink and get comfortable and try to get that rhythm back that you had?
Yeah, I feel that. I mean, it's for me, that's a track I know pretty well just because it's been in like every video game for like how many years now. So I've raced it quite a bit and know it, and that's what I like doing, is going to tracks that I know, especially road courses that I know, because you kind of know where you need to be and how you need to race the track.
Yeah.
But it's hard if you do miss a corner. It takes kind of a full lap, half a lap or so to get back in that rhythm and get that confidence and that speed and whatnot back for sure. Colin's probably gonna whoop us being he said he's been running Indy cars and road races. So.
Oh yeah, Colin, what's your strategy besides having a good paint scheme?
Well, I haven't ironed out a concrete strategy yet. I don't know. I assume we're going to get three sets of tires again this week, but I'm not sure.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, just keep it on the track and just, you know, keep your minimum speed up through the apex of the corners is really the biggest thing with road courses, is just maximizing your entry, apex, and exit, just to not overslow the car, because then you end up having to use more rear tire to get back going again. And that's what I see a lot of guys make mistakes with, mm-hmm. with the NASCAR vehicles on road courses, is that they slow down too much for the corners instead of carrying speed and picking up throttle earlier. So I think it'll be a lot of fun. I feel like I got a little chip on my shoulder now too, so I really want to go out there and hopefully do what Jared says and whoop on him.
Uh-oh. That sounds like fighting words. How do you think the Gen 4 is going to handle on that track? It should be, if it's anything like the 87s, you're in for a wild ride.
Yeah, I did I did about 15 laps mm-hmm. last night just for some preliminary testing, and it's tough, man. It's like the brakes are the hardest to figure out, just because the brake zones once again are super long, but mm-hmm. then you can kind of drive through the corner almost normally with some tire locking up, and really you got to watch out for some wheel hopping too. You want to make sure your shifts are just right, but it'll be tough. They're really loose.
Yep.
Great.
What did you find the toughest corner or section of the track for you?
Turn one. Turn one's always tough, yeah. especially with the iRacing 1Xs and off tracks. It's downhill braking zone, so
mm-hmm.
you have to brake sooner than you think you should.
Yep. And what I
find, it'd be really easy to get caught up racing somebody and forget that your brake marker's before the first signboard.
Yep.
Brake signboard.
And what gets me on turn one, because it's not a big issue to run wide over into the, to go off the track a little bit there in the overflow area. But what I've noticed on iRacing is where I get caught a lot, because you think you can just follow that line on the left back onto the track, but you get tagged with driving off the track if you don't get back on before that. It's kind of very deceiving. It doesn't look like it, but I can't tell you how many times just before going up to the S's when I drive over the overflow and just trying to get back in the rhythm and get the car back under control, you think you're driving fine, and all of a sudden you get a 1X for driving off the track near that where the overflow comes back onto the track. You ever notice that?
Yeah, definitely. Mm-hmm. And this series puts a big emphasis on having a 0X race. I mean, it's five bonus points, I believe.
That's our league too, yep.
For a 0X race. Mm-hmm. And on a road course, that can be tough. You overshoot one corner and that bonus points are gone. So
exactly.
I think that'll be tough. The turn one off-track zone is pretty strict at Watkins Glen.
Yeah.
I think it's the edge of the curb.
Yeah.
The middle of the car can't pass the edge of the outside of the curb, so it'll be tough. Like mm-hmm. I said, you can get really caught up battling with somebody and just miss your brake zone, and with these cars it's just like you're kind of screwed, because you can't slow down more than maximum deceleration, so
right.
It'll just keep going straight.
Yeah, and there's not a lot of room to pass on that track.
Yeah, definitely. The straightaways in this car don't seem like they're as long as what you think they should be.
Exactly.
Just because the cars go so fast.
Yep.
I mean, you're going like 180 miles an hour before the bus stop, which is insane, because you're not even yep. in fourth gear going to the backstretch.
Exactly. Oh, and there's just so many subtle nuances on that track. Like I said, it's very deceiving, because you can drive around it and seem like there's no issue with it, but I find the toughest part for me is usually turn 10. Or they call it turn 10. It's not turn 10 on the when they're not using the boot, but it's that where the gravel runoff is before you go into the final turn before the stretch. It's by the Jackie Stewart grandstands. That is real tough there sometimes. So, well, good luck with it. Jared, what do you find is the toughest part of that track for you?
I'd have to agree with that. The bus stop, mm-hmm. definitely turn one. I've just... It's a corner I usually figure it out about the last three laps of the race and then forget how to do it in the next time I'm there.
Yep.
But definitely turn one. The bus stop too, you carry, like you said, getting it slowed up and trying to carry as much speed through there. I tend to usually spin out about three or four times of practice.
Exactly.
Trying to find that sweet spot. But I don't know, like I said, I'm not one to really attack on road courses. Mm-hmm. Like I said, I my main focus when we go to road courses is just keeping on the track. And it seems like so far, every time I do that, I usually come out with a top 10 finish. And for me, if I can get a top 10 finish, you know, I chalk it up as a good point day.
Exactly.
I really lose a lot of points. So, you know, that'd be good. So it seems to work. Seems like a lot of people, or most people, have a hard time keeping it on track and spin out, lose 30, 40, 50 seconds, whatever it may be, and usually I'm able to hold them up if that happens to them or whatever. So we'll just see how it goes.
Got it. So on a track like Watkins Glen, how do you like your steering ratio and force feedback setup?
Well, I'll take that one from you, Jared. I just run just whatever the iRacing setup is.
Okay.
I feel like I'm pretty adaptable with the steering. I don't even have a round. I sound a little crazy talking to Jared about this. I don't even have a round wheel for my stock car. I'm running just with a Formula wheel just because, like I said, mostly what I do is sports car and open wheel racing. So
that has got to be weird running a stock car with an Indy wheel.
It's not as weird as a controller.
I'm kind of the same way, though. Most of the time I run default ratio, typically like 12 to 1 if that's the default.
Mm-hmm.
My biggest thing is I mess with the offset, which I think everybody kind of does.
Yeah.
It's just a matter of what everybody's going to tell you they're doing with it. But I mess with that more than I do the ratio.
Got it. Yeah, because I like a tighter steering wheel than loose. I just feel uncomfortable, especially on a road course where there's too much play in the wheel. I'd rather give up, you know, chewing up tires a little bit extra than having, you know, too much play when the wheel's going. Force feedback, I just drive around a couple laps and then go to the black box and click auto and let them figure it out. And I don't even touch the open setups. Like I said, I'm clumsy when it comes to technical stuff, and even worse with the cars, because if I went in and I adjusted the camber too far on trying to do the open setup, the gas cap would pop off. So that's my experience with auto mechanics. Wait till it gets lower, the light comes on, and then you call the mechanic. So anything else you guys want to say about last week's race or upcoming?
Yeah, I don't really have too much more to say. It was really fun. I'm really glad I joined the league. And
yeah,
it's really cool what you do here for podcasts for the league races and stuff.
Thanks, appreciate it.
For all of us to listen to throughout the week. And I know I'll listen back to it later this week.
Cool.
Yeah, kind of same boat. Thank you for having me on here. And shout out to Justin. I'm pretty sure he has some sponsors and stuff that he has behind the scenes and with the league to pay for the broadcast and, you know, like you said, guarantee that purse that's out there, whether it be for the championship or for the monthly money deal. So shout out to him and all his partners. And, this is my first time doing this. It's something different, but I think that's kind of cool. Kind of a chill, relaxed, kind of debrief of everything. So, it was fun to be a part of it.
Cool. Well, guys, congratulations on P1 and 3 at Vegas last week, and good luck at Watkins Glen on Sunday.
Yeah, thanks, Greg.
Great.
Yeah, thanks, Greg.
Have a good one. Have a good night, guys.
Yeah.
Jared Mogard and Colin Weatherholt, the P1 and P3 drivers from Las Vegas, talking about their strategies from last week and how they want to just get out there and do well on Watkins Glen. Tricky course. Let's take a look at the Gen 4 League points. Currently in first place, we have Jason Manns. He has one win, 46 points. Colin Weatherholt is in second place with 42 points. Jared is in third with 41 points. Randall Nichols is in fourth place with 36 points. Matthew Robinson is in fifth place. He's tied, actually he's got 36 points as well as Randall Nichols. P6 is Luke Smith with 35. He's tied with Matthew Molnar for 35. Seth Reed and Daniel Eberhardt, as well as Ryan Johnson, kind of bunching up there at the bottom of the top 10, all with 34 points. Drew Ballesteros and Scott Crump each have 33. And that's the top 12 in the league. And Bo Tiffany has 27 points. Trevor Williams, 26, tied with Dylan Jones, 26th. Dean Gagliano at 25 points, followed by Joshua Suss at 24, John Ellis Jr. at 24, Brenton Barker at 23 points, Jared Haynes at 21, Jordan Berube at 19, tied with Sean Corcoran for 19, Darwin Hansen with 15, and that rounds out the top 25 for the Gen 4 League. There was a money race back on October 5th for the Gen 4 cars at Talladega. 75-lap race and good payday all the way back to P10. The good money rich race there. Driver of the car 80, Mike Hamlin, walked home with first place finish in the grand prize of $300. Second place was Ryan Johnson, driver car number 38. He went home with $150 and rounded out the podium. Jason Mainz at P3 with $100. He drove car 12. Fourth place went to Kobe Sutphin with a $75 paycheck. Fifth place, Jake Collins, had $50 to take home with him. Sixth place, Michael Larch, went home $40 richer. $30 richer was Michael Miller, driver car 11, who finished in P7. Dylan Jones got $20 for finishing in P8 in the car 24. Joshua Suss got $10 for driving car number 14 to a ninth place finish and rounding out the top 10 in that race, car number 22, Jordan Berube with $5. The next race coming up is November 16th. It's the Battle of the Teams. It's a winner-take-all race. And that will be at Daytona in the Gen 4 Series, November 16th at 7 p.m. Winner-takes-all. $1,000 prize take home. Team of four drivers, the entrance fee, $125. Fixed setup, 85 laps, 75% fuel, tires, two sets in the pits, no quick repair, independent race control, and it will be broadcast as well. And deadline to enter is November 1st. And you can register at RollingThunderRacingSeries.com. That's the Battle of the Teams coming up November 16th at 7 p.m. Eastern Time. Winner-take-all race, $1,000 to the winning team. 85 laps at Daytona. And again, it's 75% fuel, two tires in the pits, no quick repairs, independent race control, and don't forget, registration closes November 1st. It's only October 10th now, but November 1st is not too far away. So if you want to get in and you'll have a much better chance of winning that $1,000 than $1 billion in Powerball. So I would put my money on the Battle of the Teams, November 16th. That's the Rolling Thunder money race for November. And you're listening to the Burn 'Em Down podcast. I'm your host, Greg Dreiss. And you can pick this podcast up live right now on Twitch, later on, audio and video on YouTube. And then we download the audio and send that out to Spotify, and then it's on all the major podcast platforms. So like I said, you've been listening to the Burn 'Em Down podcast. We're going to wrap things up right now with weekend. Watkins Glen is race day. That's the Rolling Thunder Racing Series at Watkins Glen this coming Sunday, sponsored by Admin Box. Global Sim Racing Channel will be the broadcaster that day, and that's Sunday, October 15th, 7:30 p.m. Eastern Time. The lobby opens, 8:20 p.m. Eastern Time qualifying, 8:30 p.m. green flag drops, and it's 55 laps at Watkins Glen, brought to you by Admin Box and on Global Sim Racing Channel. And this is the Burn 'Em Down podcast. Burn 'Em Down podcast with Greg Dreiss, your host, is produced by the Sim Racing Podcast. We also do the Sim Racing Podcast, where we bring in everybody from the racing world and talk sim racing and real racing. We also do the Cool Down Lap for Midwestern Motorsports on Monday nights. And all these podcasts, all the three different ones for the two leagues and the independent podcast, are available on Twitch, Spotify, YouTube, and all the major podcast platforms. Right now we're live on twitch.tv/GregDreiss, where it will be there for 2 weeks. And then it's also Lives in Infamy on YouTube. And you can find that at the address at the Sim Racing Podcast, Greg Dreiss. Spotify, podcasters.spotify.com/pod/show/Joe6PackRacing. Thanks for tuning in tonight. We'll be back next Wednesday night with the wrap-up for Watkins Glen. And talking about what will be coming up after that, as well as letting you know that the Battle of the Teams coming up in November, and you got to register by November 1st. Don't put it off. Get in there. $125 for it, and you can win $1,000. It sounds like a great race, and it should be a lot of fun. Until then, I'm Greg Dreiss, the host of the Burn 'Em Down podcast, which is the podcast for Rolling Thunder Racing Series. Stay in your lane and keep it on the track. Have yourselves a good night. Thanks for listening.